Vectis Radio.
Welcome to Maggie Talks To, a series of in-depth conversations with people who live and work here on the Isle of Wight.
I'm here with Robert Thompson from RT's Cafe and Grill, and I'm going to be talking to him about how he got to where he is today. Hello, Robert.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So, were you born here on the island?
I wasn't, no. I'm not going to say what I look like. I was born in Bedfordshire. And yeah, grew up there as a young lad. I was there for 16, 17 years until I left.
Right. And you, I presume you went to school there?
Didn't I? I went to lower and middle. It was back then, lower, middle, upper school locally, and then a little bit further afield for upper school. And yeah.
When you were at school, did you have any idea about what it is you wanted to do when you left?
I knew from the age of 11 that I wanted to be a chef.
Right. What made you want to be a chef?
So my brother Patrick, he's 7 or so years older than me. So at that stage, he was into catering. He was in catering college. So very much I kind of saw a professional side of them. But it wasn't just that, you know, right from young, you know, mum, dad cooked a lot. And very much like I was always first wanting to seal the beef off, or, you know, kind of carve the chicken, you know, those types of jobs. And would just absolutely revel in food and cooking. So projects at school, you know, I remember getting my mum to buy umpteen amounts of glucose, which back then was quite unusual, but like glucose syrup to go into like a chocolate tart, which I baked at school and then brought home on the bus. And yeah, so I just had a real kind of love and interest for food, cooking from a very early age.
Was there any particular food you loved at that time?
I'd say like roast dinner. I just loved the Sunday. I mean, it was always, I'm sure a lot of people resonate with this, it was a bottle of Matthias Rosé on the table with that, you know, distinctive shape of the bottle. And, you know, it wasn't kind of like lavish, but it would be like a piece of beef, for example, cooked for the whole morning and a long time, completely,
yeah,
you know, no colour to it, but there's still that taste and that smell, which just evokes all those memories. You know, roast chicken with all of the vegetables and all the garnish, and I just remember that was my favourite meal, and I really liked kind of the whole experience of it.
So did you cook the whole thing from start to finish? Or?
After a time, yeah. I mean, it was probably when I was, I'd say, 14 or so, 14, 15, I was you know, cooking and playing a real kind of part in the meals at home from that point onwards. And I would regularly cook dinner, and I think I was fairly, yeah, not too messy from memory.
I think we all make a mess, don't we? Because you have to use so many pots and pans.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
What did you do after you left school?
I was predicted. I wasn't predicted particularly good grades. I think from memory it was kind of like C to CZs and so around that kind of fact, sort of area of GCSEs. Mum and Dad knew I wanted to get out of school and I wanted to go to catering college. Or I was advised, like my brother, sort of, he was saying, like, you know, catering college was a good way to go. And the deal was sort of with my mum and dad that I needed, if I didn't want to do A levels and stay on at school, which all the teachers were, you know, were encouraging me to do so, I had to get a good, you know, GCSE. So I worked, you know, my socks off, and I got a full set of A star to C.
Well done, you.
Actually, yeah, I'm not an academic. I certainly wasn't an academic person. So consequently, like, you know, I left school. I think I was 16 when I left, just coming up 17. And I went on to looking at different catering colleges in the country. And at that stage, like the really kind of like, you know, well-known ones were Westminster and like Jamie Oliver, like that type of, you know, where he went and things. So Westminster, there was Birmingham. That was also very well-known. Where else was there? There was Slough, which was, it was one of them. I think there might have been one other. My local college, which was Bedford College, where my brother went, he encouraged me to kind of spread my wings and go further afield.
Right.
So consequently, I moved out of home at 16 and went to live in Slough.
Right.
Which,
so was that his idea because he wanted to get rid of you?
I think
he wanted the best.
I thought he wanted the best for me, absolutely. So yeah, I moved out and went on a three-year course starting at Slough. On a, I think it was an NVQ, like level 1, 2, 3. I only stayed for a year. I suppose I was in a rush. You know, I was already in the kitchen. I've been working in the kitchen for a long time by that stage, and not just kind of doing pots and pans. I'd been running section, like, you know, so I'd finish school on Friday, and I'd be on the bus straight to Woodlands Manor, it was back then, and I'd put a shift in. I'd work the whole Saturday and Sunday, you know, much sometimes to my mum and dad's kind of dissatisfaction, because they thought I should be studying or something. So yeah, that's how I came to kind of, you know, be there. Pre-year course, but I only stayed for 1 year, as I said, because I went to lecturers, had some great lecturers. Peter Pelham was one, David Goodfellows, yeah, all from the industry, but just amazing kind of people who really channeled you. They were so passionate. And I said to them, look, I want to be out. I want to be, you know, starting my career and working. So the idea was I would do year two and three in 1 year, so fast track. And I had a course, which was a fast track course. So I did the first year and went back in the second year on the understanding that I'd be doing 2 years in one, which I'd been promised. That's what I was going to do. They gave me a scholarship in the end of the first year. So I went and worked at Lordsborough Manor in Cotswolds for my whole of my summer. And then went straight back to uni. And I remember going in, they basically said, here's the folder syllabus for year three. You can have that and be working through it. So when you get to year three, you'll be ahead of the game. So I turned around to Mr. David Foskett, who was the dean of the school. I said, no, that's not the plan. I want to be working and I want to be finished at the end of this year. No, you can't do that. I said, okay, well, you know, we did agree with this. This was all agreed before I went. And I said, it's quite disappointing because I've come back. And, you know, so he said, right, well, what are you going to do then? I said, well, I'm going to leave. So I said, I'm going to leave now. So I left. I'd got my, whatever it was, MBQ. I think it was probably one at that stage. And I walked. He actually said to me, I remember it clear as day, he said, you'll be nothing about my course. And I think that kind of thing in my, you know, career has, things like that have been said. And of course, you have to overcome these things. But I always used them to actually fuel me. And probably why I remember it so vividly now, because I often name-check him and say, you know, that's what he said. You're a dean of a school. The job was not to do that. The job is to encourage students. So, yeah, I called my mum and dad and explained, and they agreed. Yeah, my brother, yeah, they all agreed that, no, you need to be out. So just down the road was Lauterland, which was a two Michelin star restaurant run by a very well-known chef called John Burton Race. I didn't have a great experience there, so I started as an apprentice. I didn't have a great experience. It was, you know, I don't want to go over as much of that now because way in the past, but it was probably how a kitchen used to be run, and it wasn't why I gone into catering. No. It wasn't about what I enjoyed, and yeah, I just found myself, like, you know, all sorts of things, like, you know, the wear and tear on you, both physically, you know, everything else was just immense.
It's hard work, isn't it?
It's hard work, and that wasn't what I shied away from. It was just the maybe like the language and these everything else on top of that.
Yeah.
Looking back, very pleased I experienced that though, and because that's probably helped me along the way. Especially now as a boss and an owner. So I wasn't very long there, probably 2 or 3 months. Went back and it knocked me, really knocked me. I considered becoming a landscape gardener and a few other bits like that.
Landscape gardener, yeah. A bit different.
Yeah, I was going to sort of get my own van. Because at that stage, when I was younger, I had my own kind of like little business. Well, on the side, it started off car washing. I employed three of my mates at school. So we'd go around as an army of us and we'd clean, sometimes like on Saturday, 20, 30 cars. I mean, we were rolling in it. I've never had so much money. But that moved on to me, for example, offering gardening services. So I cut lawns. I even like relayed a drive one time, built a little rockery. And like the bloke from Jewson's turned up and was like, yeah, how's your dad about, you know, for the order? And I went, no, it's for me. Yeah, I kind of had that in me then. I duly went back to Oakley where I grew up. My brother was head chef at Woodlands Manor and then another place nearby. So I went back and carried on working with him. Got my confidence back, you know, got back into it. Then he, shortly after that, moved up to Doncaster Way to open a restaurant. It was owned by someone else, but open a new restaurant there called Chimneys. Stunning place, really, really lovely. It was husband and wife. It was their sort of house almost that they did. Huge property. went up. I worked with Patrick, and I think I was there for about 18 months, and that was great, worked really well. But then sort of 30 or so, I can't remember exactly, but miles the other way was Wintering Fields, two Michelin star, led by Annie and Jermaine Schwab. Jermaine Schwab was the chef, Annie front of house, and they'd been running that for, I believe, it was like 16, 17 years. They had two Michelin stars. They had 5 AEA rosettes. They had 9 out of 10 in the Good Food Guide.
Very good then.
Not very good at all. they were up there. We're probably in the top 2 or 3 in the country at that stage. So I wanted to spread my wings again. I wanted to get back onto that that Michelin kind of route. I had my interview September the 11th. I remember it very clearly, obviously, of course, for other sad reasons. So I got in the car, went over there, had an interview, got put in the kitchen. I worked, peeled little hot new potatoes, did the garnish, other things. And at the end, sat down with Annie, who was almost seemed very fierce, and because she was very, very astute and very, very proper. Had an interview, accepted a job as apprentice in the kitchen. Can't remember how much money it was. I think it was 12,500, I think.
Not as much as cleaning cars.
No, it wasn't. I started there. I can't remember the exact date now, but I was probably 19. And then, started as apprentice. I think I was there for 2 or 3 years, and different people left. I worked my way up. And then head chef left. I became head chef. And I think I became head chef there at 22. And it was a 2 Michelin star.
That's good, isn't it?
So I was running the kitchen for Jermaine. I had 13 chefs in my brigade in the kitchen. And
13 chefs?
Yeah, it was a big team. And he put sole kind of, responsibility. He gave me all the rope, but he was always there kind of,
just in case.
Yeah, checking and looking and advising. But it probably timed with him at his time of life. He'd been working extremely hard for quite a long time. So hopefully it was a good bit of respite for him. And so, I became head chef. And then at the age of 23, just counts 23, Annie and Jermaine decided to retire and sell the restaurant. So he sold the restaurant to the owner who's still here now. Now, of course, when that happens, all of the awards and everything else get taken away. So,
because they belong to
restaurant. They belong to the restaurant, but certainly something like 2 Michelin stars or Michelin stars, they would usually take it away unless they have an incoming chef who has a pedigree or I know, et cetera. But so they took the 2 stars away, but I instantly gained back 1 Michelin star, and that was at 23. I think we kept...
Bit of an achievement.
Yeah. It went down to 4 rosettes, and we kept 9 out of 10 in the Good Food Guide.
So what do you have to do to get a Michelin star? What happens?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions about Michelin star. People think probably it's more known about now. It used to be very much, very secret. But I'd say, honestly, you have to cook from the heart and put your personality on the plate. For a one star, I think it's very much consistency. I wouldn't say it's necessarily like a style of food, but it has to be complete consistency with great flavours, great taste.
Yeah.
They say moving on like 2 stars, 3 stars, that becomes where it's more like the chef personality. You could literally eat it blindfolded and know, a Michelin inspector would know. So I think that's how they award. It's not about service, supposedly, although I do feel that service comes into it.
Yeah.
So that was me as head chef then, and I stayed with the then owner for a couple of years. By that point, of course you get a new owner come in, a new owner wants to make his mark or her mark on the place. Changes happen, not always for the better, sometimes for the better. And for me, I just said, I've been up that way for quite some time. I wanted to spread my wings. I wanted to kind of move on.
Okay, we can take a little break there for the advert, so we'll be back with you in a minute.
Vectis Radio on DAB.
So we're back with Robert again. So you were talking about you're just moving on. And where did you go next?
So, that was me up in Wintringham Field, sleepy old Wintringham, not far from Scunthorpe and the Pumber Bridge. And I looked and I ended up taking a job at Clifton House near a Tapley, Buckinghamshire, Berkshire area.
Right, yeah.
Massive stately home. At that point, it was owned by Von Essen Hotels. That was a hotel group which was owned by Andrew Davis, I think his name was. So I took a job as head chef in Waldo's, which was their fine dining, swanky restaurant downstairs.
Yeah.
I took with me my sous chef, Dan, who's now very high up working for Jason Atherton, great guy. So we went down there and, yeah, stayed there for, I think it was probably about a year. Slight problem in the Bryson, didn't really pay the suppliers. There was problems. I think in the end, the whole hotel group folded for 200 plus million, something like that. Yeah.
Do you?
And consequently now, I'm sure Clifton is got bought out and redone, and it's now back to a fabulous hotel. None of his suppliers were being paid, all on stop. You weren't allowed to go down to the supermarket and buy sugar or anything because they're nominated suppliers. So it was a real kind of not a good situation.
Not satisfactory.
No, it wasn't. It was hard. So I phoned up a agency friend and I said, Gary, what's happening? what's occurring? This place is going down. And he just said, look, how do you fancy the other way? He said, there's a guy there. He's got a restaurant. The whole team's left. He said the place probably loses quite a bit of money. Yeah, he said to go down. So, yeah, I went down and interviewed. It was a very strange interview, but some key words were kind of, no one knows who I am. I'm just in the background. You can keep it that way. I think said if you buy it. I think possibly said if you make it work, I'll set you up in Mayfair or something like that. But anyway, like the main thing was that there was an opportunity at this place with no one involved, apart from, me, the team. And there was seven bedrooms, and there was a sister restaurant. And yeah, so I jumped at it, 4 months, Michelin star, was awarded. And yeah, it went.
Aren't you proud of it?
Yeah, of the team, it's always the team.
Where was that?
That was at the Hamburg, and right. Ventnor. So I remember I got down and I looked kind of, interview, or it wasn't really an interview, but I kind of looked out to see. I looked back at the hotel. I can remember there was these cracks in the walls and there were these spindly strange flowers that were pretty dead. And I looked and I went, well, you've got that. And my memories of the Isle of Wight were coming down on holiday and going down Shanklin Shine on my dad's shoulders, smelling the crepes at the bottom. I had really great memories of it. And you looked out then, I stood at the Hamburg Road and looked out to sea, looked down at the bottom, look at this. This is something. There's something special.
Absolutely.
I accepted it. I think I was at the Hamburg for 7 years, I think it was. We got Michelin star. We got 7 out of 10 in Good Food Guide. I think it was in the top 20 UK and hotel chef owned hotels or something. And the other thing was that I learned from business point of view. I was doing figures. I was doing a GP. I was doing all those things, and it made money.
Yeah.
It had gone from losing a hell of a lot of money, and it made money straight away. Not loads, but the key thing was for me, I ran it as my own business.
Yeah.
Didn't matter that it might be owned by someone else, but I ran it as my own. That included the pond as well, like a pond cafe in Bonchurch. Again, that was it wasn't particularly busy or anything. And in the end, that was a thriving property business. That was very difficult to make money there because it was too small. And had lots of kind of plans and lots of sort of advice for people, but let's say didn't get followed or didn't get taken on board. So yeah, that again reached its end. It reached its end where involvement from others became untenable. I'd worked very hard to establish a team of people, a reputation, something that was profitable, just about, compared to where it had been.
Yeah.
And that was literally after a year or 2 years. I mean, the journey of a restaurant would be, you have sometimes wait 5-6 years before you're kind of into making money.
It's quite an investment, isn't it?
It is. It's a massive investment. And where we are today, looking at the problems of today, we certainly didn't have those pressures back then. So I looking back, I enjoyed my time there. I think it was a shame that it ended. And it was a shame that, people decided that they knew best. I'm one of someone who bounces off ideas. At the moment I'm looking at decking, for example, for in the garden here, and I ask everyone. I ask people's opinion. I reach out whenever I can to people who I go, well, that they know lots and they've experienced lots. But what drives me potty is when someone goes, no, don't do it like that. Or, no, you shouldn't do this. You should do it like this. And you kind of look and you go, why? Where is that coming from?
Yeah.
And I'm looking back at your track record of losing tons of money, having to get all your staff from agency, because how else are you going to get them? You've not got a reputation, which is bringing them in.
Yeah.
you know, you haven't got a reputation amongst your guests. Yeah, the restaurant's empty most of the time. So why are you telling me how to do it?
Yeah.
When I've been here for 5-6 years, you've got a Michelin star, you've got this. It's known across the country.
Yeah.
So it came to an end. Again, enjoyed my time there. Huge experience. Yeah, wouldn't change it. That was demanding. Yeah, very demanding. I actually came to the Isle of Wight and got like with my ex-wife. And that pressure of running business, you know, I mean, we were together for 10 years and worked together for 10 years. And when you're running a place like that, I mean, the pressure, it just takes over.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot, you know, from that. So I took some time out after that. I kind of went, I don't know what to do now.
Did you think about my beach bum?
I didn't, no. I think I did explore quite a lot. I sort of, you know, cooked a lot. Yeah, I mean, I did different like events and kind of cooking lessons and different things like that for people. But the whole time I was going for interviews and trying to look, I kind of got to a bit where I think because of such a, you know, quite a stressful time at that place in the end, I looked to counter all sorts of options. I spoke to Atul Kotcher, you know, very famous Indian chef from London.
Yes, sure.
About going out to India, for example, and he wanted me to look at sort of overseeing the opening of a number of restaurants sort of that he was doing there. I looked at a restaurant, being a head chef of a restaurant hotel in Zermatt in Switzerland. So I got on the old funicular railway, you know, I went up on the training. I actually accepted that job. And on the way back down, you know, I was coming back to Isle of Wight, sort of came back down, I was like, what are you doing? What on earth are you doing? You've been on the Isle of Wight for X amount of time and you have something really special. You have this reputation. You have this network of amazing guests. Yeah, you still have, hopefully would have access to staff and, you know, like amazing people. Why on earth are you going to go and chuck that away? So I came back with this, you need to be here, open a restaurant. I started the process of trying to open my own restaurant. I remember I looked at different properties. I put an offer in on a property in Bembridge. I looked at a property in on the way out of Newport. Yeah, I looked at lots of properties, but I just couldn't get to it financially. It just didn't happen.
It is expensive.
Yeah, and
it's not just a property, it's what you put into it.
Everything. Yeah, right. Yeah. But by that stage, I was doing, because of like the Hamburg and other places, every time I went to something like that, I did a business plan and I would do, like 3-year projections on average spend for breakfast, lunch, dinner, how many customers, lunch, for dinner, how much money from events. So, yeah, interesting, like the Hamburg, for example, you know, you look back and if you look back now at the figures and go like, yeah, wasn't far off. So I've always done that, going right the way through. And then I started to do my own business plan, find a place. Couldn't make it work. Was approached through a friend to meet someone who was buying the George in Yarmouth. So, yeah, I went and cooked for them. It all sounded really good. Again, it was very interesting. It's maybe just me, my luck, but it was very much, I'm not a hotelier or a restaurateur. I just want to, you know, sort of, oh, no, this was from the owner. I very much just want to be there, be at the front, say hello to people, be the host, that type of thing. So you run it. Okay. Yep. Yep. Look at the turnover of the property then. I think in 9 months, it wasn't far off doubled. Now, that wasn't necessarily because of tons of investment and marketing. Most of that did come down to food.
Yeah.
You know, food, drink, you know, hospitality.
People like food.
Yeah.
They come and...
That's what they come.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't like it was just about, you know, me. It certainly wasn't. It was about the team. That place, you know, did really well and it was extremely busy. I think maybe where it went wrong was a lot of people were coming there and saying, oh, we've been to Robert's places before and Robert and Robert and Robert. And I can understand that if you've spent your hard-earned money on a place and, yeah, you know, maybe feel that someone else is getting the, you know, but it wasn't me going, look at me and
no,
take all the glory, yeah. It was me and a team of people working really hard to achieve something and create a great destination. So it's
long hours, isn't it?
Yeah, incredibly. So that went downhill quickly to the point where it wasn't this thing of the beginning, you run it. It was, you run it, right? Oh, now it's busy and it's doing well. Oh, I'm gonna now take over. Now I'm going to make decisions and I'm going to tell you what should be on the menu and I'm going to tell you this and tell you that. Then you go, okay, here we are again. And then, you look back and you go, well, what happened? It went down, you had more and more, you know, other staff that came in, and did it work? No, it didn't. So I think, again, that's kind of, for me, that's, it's not comforting, because that's someone putting a hard-earned cash into somewhere on the Isle of Wight, which I'm passionate about, and they went wrong. Didn't work. So I could see it happening during that period. So I decided, look, let's try and make the restaurant work again. So I did a business plan, long and short of it. I bought the freehold of the property in Newport Town Lane, which then became Thompson's. I got out of a George. I launched myself into that. Yeah, my dad helped me lots of people. I'm a tradesman from here, from the island, but we refurbed it, you know, refloored it, re-rendered it, free everything to put an amazing kitchen in
there. A lot of
the
investment as well, the time and money, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was, it was 150K of investment, of not my own. I mean, I sort of took some inheritance very early, so I didn't have any left. Yeah, which I'm very thankful to parents for. You know, loans, you know, all the rest of it. Of course, took the mortgage, and so, you know, that was good, at bricks and mortar. So then Thompson's opened 2015.
That's a long time ago.
It does. That's, yeah, perfect. And that, you know, that made money from day one. You know, it made money. Lots of people still say, you know, location, opposite Morrison's. But at that stage, everyone could gravitate into Newport. You know, it wasn't far from anywhere central. So the reason I went there, it was a stepping stone. It was a chance to run my own business, to own my own business. And I had a budget. I think the property was 195,000, I think. You know, I had a budget, and that's what fitted the budget. And so I made the property work. And then...
It wasn't a big restaurant, though, was it?
It wasn't, though. But, I mean, surprisingly, downstairs and upstairs, I think it had 45 covers, which actually is not bad, but it was split between two levels.
Yeah,
it made it interesting for running the business. But, yeah, a lot of people, I think, still look back and have very fond memories, because the building, and still has now, it has so much character to it.
Yeah.
You know, with what it's opened up as now, as 11, you know, it's still, you go in there and... Yeah, the feel of it is really cosy. It's really like a lovely old building with a lot of history to it in Newport. So, yeah, ran Thompson's for X amount of years, and then COVID hit.
Yes.
Interesting time. Obviously, we don't want to sort of revert back to it. But for me, yeah, I know it was extremely, you know, trying, stressful, sad time for so many people.
We're going to take another little break there for the adverts. We'll be back with you in a minute.
Vectis Radio. On DAB.
We're back again with Robert after the adverts. So COVID hit, and then what?
Yeah, you remember it. I watched the news. I was looking for just a few words to come out of his mouth. And I watched him, and he said, you know, lockdown, lockdown. Apart from key workers. I think that was the word, you know. If you work in supplying food, etc. All right, there you go. Food, I supply it. I'm a key, you know.
I'm a key worker.
Yeah, I'm a key worker. And at that stage, when I'd spent 3 days like looking at the wall, going, I think I just spent 25 grand in different things, upgrading the kitchen from plates and other things like that. So I was really up against it, should we say. So it was the worst time of year, because you'd done the winter, and so money was kind of quite tight. And then I'd spent this money on top. So I was looking at it going, the wages were coming up. I didn't have money. Didn't have the money to pay it. Obviously furlough hadn't started just by that point. So I was just going, what's happening? Same as everyone. And so I made a menu. I put it out on Instagram. I went in, just me. I made it, I packaged it into Chinese takeaway sort of containers, brown paper bags, wrote a recipe. It went off, you know, straight away. It was 50, 60, 80, 100, 200 people a week. And so then I was kind of not working on a Saturday, Sunday. Monday, I'd go in, I'd collate all of the orders, get a print all these bits of paper off, I'd tot up how many bouillabaisse, how many PMs, whatever it is, and then to make, I'd order all stuff. It would all come in, and then I'd work sort of all day Tuesday, most of Tuesday night, all day Wednesday. I'd sleep at the restaurant quite often. I'd make all this menu. Then I'd package it. So on a Wednesday night, I finished kind of, getting most of the initial prep done. I can't remember now exactly, but anyway, I'd package it. But by Thursday night, because I would go out delivering on Friday around the island on Saturday. So by Thursday night, I was making sure everything was ready to go.
You delivered it all yourself?
Yep. Then I usually finish cooking and packing, then I'd get my phone and I'd tape it to like a tripod in the restaurant. Add this little clicker to turn it on and off. Then I'd record myself making, or not making, but putting the dishes together.
Yeah.
I'd send it to one of my staff. They'd put it together as a video. Then I'd release the video. And then Friday morning, I'd pack the car up and I'd go around the island. I can't remember what the app was. I had a Route Me app or something. So I'd put in all the destinations and tell it where to go. I'd fly around the island, deliver these bags, go back, finish any more prep, do the next day, same again. Then do the next menu. And that went on for, I can't remember how many months now, but it grew and grew.
Yeah.
And then came their amazing initiative. What was it? You know, we're going to open up again. Yeah. So it opened up. I looked and thankfully, I kind of looked and went, I'm not sure about this. This is, you know, my restaurant's very small and I didn't have outside and whatever else. So I took a view and went, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick with this. And at that stage, UB Chef, it was called, and they, I think at that stage, I had started to call it UB Chef. But it was like this U and B. It wasn't as it now is. And it had like a man, like my face, pointing like the call to action, call, you know, whatever. And so we carried on delivering, but that grew and grew and grew. I then took staff back, you know, gradually, to the point where I had nearly had everyone back. To the point where, you know, some of my staff will remember it, you know, not for good reasons, but like Valentine's, for example.
It went mad, didn't it?
Was just, I mean, you look back and you go, you were surviving. That's what we had to do. I think we did something like 500-600 people. You know, it was a couple of Mercedes Sprinter vans turned up.
That's an awful lot.
It was ridiculous. It was too much. I had people in tears. You know, myself included. My fiance, she was coming in helping packing. My bookkeeper was helping packing. It was just relentless. But it, what it showed to me, because there is a huge market there.
Yes.
So I carried on and I pushed UB Chef. Thompson's remained closed. Thompson's became a factory. I put up, he went inside it. There was a walk-in fridge built in the bar downstairs. So you couldn't get to the bar. It was just literally made. We had an Arctic turning up with fleece wall call liners and cardboard for packaging. So the place became essentially a store, a prep kitchen, you know, and we would package it all there and send it out. And every week it supported it because, of course, then it closed down again.
Yeah.
But I could keep X staff. The point came when it reopened. So when everything opened up again, of course, it took a hit like a lot of those delivery things did and it really dived. But I carried on with it. And we did keep going. It managed to support X, you know, people of staff. But I could see where it was going and it needed to, you know, either reopen a restaurant or do something. By that stage, I'd pumped another, I can't remember how much it was now.
Lots.
Another 100K, yeah. Like into the at-home service, you know, for branding. Yeah, I got it branded by, really nicely, which I'm very, very pleased to do. It's there today. I've spent massive amounts of money on boxes, yeah, like special, you know, printed, personalised boxes, yeah. Which we still have now. Branded ice, branded this, branded everything. Loads of investment and went into it. So then, with the restaurant reopening, I thought, I'm not reopening Thompson's. It's just, I didn't think it was the right thing to do. Some say stupidly, but I was approached to go and work, which one was at North House in Cowes. And it was being bought by a couple. And it was a very similar kind of thing. Again, you run it, you do it, you know, or be kind of, there's three of us and da, da, da. Suffice to say, it went wrong. You know, stressful, highly stressful time. And something I don't look back on with, you know, with any kind of, you know, smiley faces. It was not just for myself, but for the team of people that I took in there. It was horrendous. And it didn't end in a good way. And I'm very pleased that's behind me. Really, really pleased.
You learned a lot, I suspect.
I learned again how not to do. Yeah, how not to. But the thing was annoying. I'd already learned that. Learned that quite a few times.
So you learned it again now.
But yeah, anyway, that cost me, what, 10 months out of my time. So put it behind you, dust yourself off, get up and off you go again. But still, all along with this, you've got a team of people who worked for you. Amazing. You still got them, so you don't lose them. You still got a network of guests, you know, much of which, a large percentage is local, of which you don't lose. So I went back, reopened Thompson's. I'd put another 40 into that, recarpeted it upstairs, did loads of, you know, all sorts of things. It had been a factory for half so long. It hadn't been open as a restaurant.
Yeah.
The whole front, probably people remember, I'd scaffolded it and Callum from CB Deco, he got off and they all decorated it lovely colour what it is now. A ton of money went back in. We reopened it, I think it was on a Thursday to Sunday basis. Again, yeah, busy. It worked really well. I think they had music on Sundays and it was good. But we also started UB Chef again, so that was carrying on. I think then probably what happened was things, as they have done over the past number of years, started to get tighter and tighter. Budget squeezed more and more. When I came out of North House, someone messaged me because his son used to work for me, so it was a sort of a connection. This gentleman messaged me and said, "I've got this property in Ryde. It used to be Lizelle building. I didn't know it because, of course, I hadn't been in here because it had been Lizelle for X amount of time, and I had no reason to. I wouldn't have known anything about it. So he said, 'Do you want to come and have a chat?' And politely, I said, 'No.' I just said, 'I don't want anything to do with anything else apart from my own business.' He messaged me a little bit of time later, three or four months later, said, 'Why not just come and have a look?' And I did. And I'm so thankful to him that he messaged again, because I came and had a look. And I walked through those doors, through those two pillars, walked around. It wasn't a restaurant, but it still had the kind of layout, I suppose, because it did used to be a restaurant. But I walked around. There was a part, a kitchen installed already downstairs. There was a walk-in fridge,
Bit of a view.
Yeah, well, just a bit, yeah. It had the garden walking out, and I looked, and I tell the stories to a lot of people. I got back in the car, and after saying goodbye to Richard, and I drove back to Newport, and I was banging the steering wheel with my hand and just like shaking my head as I went back, because I knew that it's not a case of whether you should or you won't or whatever. I had to. It is obvious. I had to. I'd been looking for a venue for years and years, which would encompass everything. And then I went, "You've got to go for this." And banging the steering wheel, hence, because I knew what I was in for. I knew you'd have to go like, "Let's do a plan here and start to work out what you need." I knew straight away, right? Refurbishment.
Money.
Kitchen, fridges, this, staff, endless. So I think that was, when was that? I can't remember the name now, but it was 2024. It was basically, it was the summer. I started talking about it with Richard. And then I came in, we arranged a lease. So I arranged a lease whereby I leased the ground floor, which we're on now, and the lower floor and the garden area. And Richard did a huge amount in moving his staff and team upstairs. So I had like a kitchen area downstairs, but that was all moved upstairs. So yeah, huge commitment from him as well. I came in here just before Christmas. I think at least hadn't been kind of all done and dusted, but Richard was great and said, "No, you can get in," because I had the time limit. I knew when I wanted to open. Had to be before Easter because of like timelines, finances. I was at home, straight back to it, doing all the financial, the projections, going, okay, this, and this. And I got in just before Christmas, I think 3 days before Christmas, with my chippy, Ollie. And the bar was all sort of fleshed up just before Christmas, the structure. And then between then and the 7th of March, what you're in. It was...
And it's beautiful, isn't it?
I stripped everything. So I stripped all of the old floors up. And it was in a good state. Don't get me wrong, it was in a good state. But I wanted, of course, to bring what it is now to it. So I stripped everything, pulled up all of the floors, everything. Did a lot of that. I had, for example, Long Lane came in and did all the floor, right the way throughout. So you've got this seamless floor going through. I had, tilers like Pete came in and did all the tile on the bar. West Tech Surfaces did all of the bar top. So loads of locals, who I'd come to know over different years. I had lots of advice from guests, a couple actually, who are very got design businesses or interior design businesses. So again, I reached out. What do you think? What do you think of this? I was going to Long Lane getting samples of floor. I was going to the paint shops getting paint colours, swatches for the seats, and pulling it all together. So huge journey at that point. I completely took myself out of Thompson's. I wasn't there. Ed and Others will tell you, but yeah, they were doing it.
It's quite a short space of time, don't you? Yeah. 3 months to do it in.
I was here 6 days a week in my overalls with my, you know, DIY clothes, 16 hours a day with the tools, just cracking on. You know, all documented and all kind of pictures done. But yeah, we opened 7th of March here. And what we did here and what I wanted to do was, this was taken into account a lot. The times we're in. I want an approachable restaurant, cafe, where people can go in and basically go in for the reason of why I got into this business in the first place, which is hospitality. And I think lots of people need to remember the clues and the name. You need to be hospitable.
Yes.
You need to arrive and have a friendly face. You know, it needs to be a happy team. It needs to be a team that want to be there. That's the whole point of this business. So, and if you don't have those things, I mean, it's very hard to stay in business, let alone all the other pressures. Hence, RT Cafe Grill opened on this level. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, cake, glass of wine, a few gougères, whatever it is. It's aimed at being buzzy. A couple of people maybe think it's a bit noisy sometimes, but my aim is, but you know, you can hear it in the background probably here.
It's a bit noisy, actually, yeah. Because you've got people.
Yeah, I do. And I love, if it's quiet, I get very nervous. Yeah. You know, I like it when it's fuzzy. Like last night, the restaurant was just lifting off. You know, a Friday night, coming towards the end of January, and it was full. You know, and so very much I wanted the approachable restaurant, cafe grill. And then the plan at that stage, because it's got the downstairs to a basement, you know, but it still has windows to look out. The plan was, what do I do in it? You know, sorry, I shouldn't say the plan was. I didn't know what the plan was. But I had the kind of idea, do I put Thompson's restaurant downstairs and reopen it? And you've got two restaurants. So I thought, you know what? You've learned a lot along the years. You've got the T-shirts. I thought, let's sit on it for a year and see how it goes, which I did. We did use it. We used it for a couple of occasions and you know, things, but and also budget. You know, I spent a fortune on upstairs.
Then you did.
And redoing this, olive trees at the front. You know, all these lights and whatever else. Yeah. So simply, didn't even have the money at that stage to do downstairs. I look back and I go again. Thank goodness you didn't, because in that year you worked out exactly what you wanted it to be. You brought Thompson's back, which is back now, and that comes back as a pop-up. So Thompson's is open downstairs once a month for a week,
right,
apart from August, because it's because of summer, it's just so busy, and also apart from December. So it's there as a pop-up restaurant where it becomes individual tables. The tables that used to be at the old restaurant that the dad made, they all get put up. The cutlery goes in the cutlery drawers, although we've got a new set of cutlery tanner now. And it's there's like a tasting menu, but it's not a huge tasting menu. It's essentially three courses, starter, main course, dessert, with your appetizers, your pre-desserts. It's, you know, so it becomes six courses, but you can add an optional seventh and an optional eighth course. So that now happens down there once a month for a week at a time. And it's quite new. We've done three now, but they're all on the website throughout the year. The rest of the time, it's a private dining room or two private dining rooms. And one table seats 22, the other seats 16. I made the tables. They're like bespoke, like lovely burnt orangey, you know, black and white, you know, tables. You look in on a wine cellar, which is fully sort of sided with glass. Both rooms can just see through each other through a bit of that section. Each room's got its own music system, so you can play your own music. You can have a surprise entrance, so you can come in and speak easy door, give a password. So basically, long and short of it, what I was then trying to achieve was you've got relaxed cafe grill upstairs, which is building. You know, I think that it's becoming, you know, people are understanding that. Maybe my reputation goes against me. Not that I've wanted this, but Michelin, once you start bounding those words about people, maybe think you're unapproachable, too expensive, high end, you know, a bit maybe not fun. But that's why this is growing very much now, day by day.
Brilliant.
People coming in who just live locally, who didn't know it was here.
So what would you say to people who want to, not sure what they want to do or how they're going to get there? What advice would you give to people?
So accessibility point of view, you know, that was a real driver. You know, you've got, for example, big car parks, you know, opposite and just down the road.
Yeah.
Just down the road, you've got the bus. Yeah. So lots and lots of people come on the bus.
You've got people who think, oh, I want to go and make a restaurant or I want to go and be a fighter pilot. What would you advise them to do? How would you advise them to go about what they're doing?
It's interesting at the moment because would I advise anyone to open a restaurant at the moment? Unfortunately, I'm going to say no, not at the moment, because Yeah, I'm not going to get all political here, but, you know, it's not in a good shape.
No.
So I would say that there is not much, or there isn't any payback or kind of security at the moment to open a restaurant, which is a real shame. If a few of those things change, which of course they're going to, hopefully everything comes back up again. Absolutely. To go into that, which way would I go? Well, one of the most important things is you need a solid backing behind you. Yeah. So it's solid backing either that you cook or that you run restaurants or, you know, maybe there's a couple of you and you've got all things covered. But I'd say going into this, as people come in like even last night, and they'll go, oh, why are you giving the coats? You know, or they might say, I don't know, like, you know, we didn't expect to see you here. That's a common one. People think that I'm never here. The fact is most days I open up and I lock up. So if it's your own, you need to know how to be the bookkeeper. You need to know how to be the handyman.
So you've got to learn as you go along.
The chef, the barista, the cocktail maker, the sommelier. You need to know all of it.
General dog's body.
You do, because at the end of the day, you know, someone told me this years ago, like a very well-known restaurateur, they said, your job every day is to make yourself so you're not needed. And then I cast that down to my head chef, you know, front of house manager. Because if I make it so I'm not needed, that surely means I've done my job properly because I've delegated well.
Yeah.
Does it mean that I'm not here? No.
No.
And my fiance will tell you about it, you know. But I'd say to open your own place, you need to know your craft.
Yes.
And also you need to stick to your guns. So if you have an idea, and yeah, you need to research it well, and you need to go, you know, is there evidence of this working elsewhere? But you need to go into it, you need to persevere, and you need to stick at it. Yeah. You need to cut your cloth accordingly when times change, and that's just how you get through.
Brilliant.
So yeah, not a route for it, but at the moment I'd say it's very unforgiving at the moment.
Thank you for that, Robert. It's been fascinating to listen to that. Do you have a favourite track that you'd like us to play at the end?
You got me on that.
Any old them, whatever you fancy.
Tell you what, this morning, it was yesterday, we were on the way to work, I was listening to that, Bon Jovi came on Living on a Prayer.
Yeah.
Resonates quite a lot at the moment, so I quite like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Is that all right?
Love it.
No, thank you.
If you'd like to hear this or any other of the conversations again, go to the Vectis Radio webpage, vectisradio.com, and you can find it amongst the podcasts.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.